Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City, a 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime. Kansas City wins the game.
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk host as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studios, here's CDOT.
All right, let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You were listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Excited, thrilled, delighted to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Wednesday. We will open up the phone lines and we will take your calls about the Kansas City Royals. They just lost a game to the Milwaukee Brewers, who, coming into this series, were absolutely limping. You and I, Rob, started this week talking about keeping bad teams down. The Brewers, now, their opening series was on the road against the Yankees, and they got pounded in those games. They got pounded in game one by the Royals. That was one that you were kind of counting that you were going to win the series. The Royals did not win the series. We'll start with that here. If you want to chime in, you can do so. 913-586-7965. Now, I'm going to try to be measured in my commentary on this because we are talking about the first week of the season. I'm not here to overreact. I'm not here to tell you that all is lost with the Kansas City Royals, but I do think that we need to discuss what is going on with the team and the problems that I am seeing early on. Now, this does not mean that the Royals can't turn things around, get back to 500, make the postseason. All of those things are obviously possible, but we got to talk about the baseball game that we just watched and the early season data and information that we are accumulating with the Royals. Let's start with this. Rob, I'm going to read to you the lineup that the Royals put out there in their last game in 2024. This is the postseason. This was their last game. Michael Massey, Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, Salvador Perez, Yuli Gurriel, MJ Melendez, Tommy Pham, Kyle Isbell, Mikel Garcia. That sounds a whole lot like the lineup that they currently have out there. Now, yes, you add Jonathan India, you add this piece, but for the most part, they have brought back the core and a lot of the complementary pieces to last year. I would say the Royals' biggest problem in the final 30, 45 games of the season was their offense. All they've done is just continue the problem that they had at the end of the season. Now, it's early. But let me give you a stat. If you are incorporating the six games that the Royals have already played this season, if you take the Royals' last 30 games, The Royals have scored 88 runs in their last 30 games, dating back to last season, with virtually the same parts and same pieces. Now, yes, there's context. Vinny Pasquantino didn't play in some of those games. He was injured. He also didn't play in yesterday's game because he was injured. Yes, they've added Jonathan India, and Jonathan India wasn't in some of those early games. Yes, I understand that the Royals have changed over these 30 games. They've scored 88 runs. I haven't read the text line, but I'm guessing there is complaints about a lot of different things. It's this guy in the bullpen. It's the call earlier today by the umpire to call the balk. Yes, things are not ideal. The Royals' biggest problem to me just seems very, very simple. They can't score. They can't score. They've scored 88 runs in their last 30 games. They've gotten great pitching performances in their last 30 games. They got a really solid pitching performance today. But if you can't consistently score three runs, there's no other conversation to have. You got shut out yesterday. You scored two runs today. You lost both games. It's not that hard to figure that out. 30 games. They've scored 88 runs. Now, this is where I think we can potentially be critical about the Royals. This was a problem at the end of the season. Now, I think the Royals tried. They wanted to go out there. They wanted to get a power bat. They wanted to get an impact bat. They wanted to give their lineup a little bit more punch. All of us looked at their outfield and said, hey, your outfield's a problem. Hey, MJ Melendez, Hunter Renfroe, Kyle Isbell, these guys are a problem. Hunter Renfroe had four strikeouts today. Four. Count them. Four. That's what he's done since he's gotten here, is strikeout. He had 84 strikeouts last season. He already has six in five games. That's what he does, is strikeout. Since Hunter Renfroe has been a member of the Kansas City Royals, we're talking about a guy who's hitting 219. A guy who has a below 300 on base percentage. Some of the Royals' early season problems are not that difficult to spot. They can't consistently score. They have too many holes in their lineup. That was a problem at the end of the season, and that is what got them eliminated from the postseason. That has been their biggest problem early on in this season, is that they cannot consistently score runs. So I'm happy we can take phone calls, we can read your text, whatever conversation you want to have about the Royals, but their problem seems very straightforward to me. At the end of the season, it was obvious that their offense was leaking oil. They have retained 85% of last year's offense. And some of the same problems are existing for this year's team. I looked up hits with runners in scoring position. Bobby is still Bobby Witt Jr. Vinny's helping out a little bit. Salvi's still helping out a little bit. That sounds like last year's offense. And that's kind of it for the Royals offense. You don't get consistent production from really anybody else. And once you get outside the Royals' top four or five hitters, it is a choose-your-own-adventure for the upcoming season. So again, we can take text 913-586-7965. I do want to talk a little bit of Chiefs. The Chiefs told the NFL that they want to consistently play home games on Christmas. So we'll talk about that coming up in a little bit, but I want to continue our Royals conversation, 913-586-7965. Rob, that's the biggest thing to me. They've scored 88 runs in their last 30 games. If you are consistently scoring less than three runs a game, which the Royals have now for a month of games, and if we extrapolated this out even more, we probably, if we went to 45 games, we would find a very similar number. You're just not going to consistently win if you can't put up runs and score. Starting pitching hasn't been the problem. I don't think their bullpen, for the most part, has been the problem. What has been the problem for the Royals on April 2nd was the same problem for the Royals on October 2nd.
I agree with you. There is no need to panic. There is no need to, you know, pandemonium in the streets. None of those things. But I think it is fair to critique the offense that has come out slow. Now, do I think it's going to get better? Yes. I think this is just a bad stretch. Like, even the good Royals, 2014-2015, went through bad stretches. I think that's what the Royals are doing. It just came out of the gate a little slow. But Vern on Friday, when he was on with us, talked about the big six. The Royals are going to come down to their big six. He talked about Perez and Vinny and Bobby and Reagans and Lugo in the rotation. Like, he had a six guys are of vital importance to the Kansas City Royals. It is six games, so take a grain of salt. One of those big six, Salvador Perez, is not hitting well to start the season. He's hitting 208. That's not good enough, including a strikeout in a major situation today. Vinny Pasquantino, more of the same. He is healthy now. He had a great opening day. Again, six games, so grain of salt, sample size, I get it. He's not hitting great to start the season. Bobby is Bobby, but even Bobby's good right now doesn't look like wow, and we're used to wow with Bobby. So I think if we're agreeing with Vern, there's a big six this team's going to rely on. Three of the big six on the offensive side are not coming out of the gate hot. Salvi hasn't been hot. Vinny hasn't been hot. Bobby hasn't been hot by Bobby standards, and that would make the offense scuffle. Jonathan India is holding up his end of the bargain. I think Mikel Garcia has exceeded expectations, again, very early. And this lineup was never going to be boppers 1-9. But if you're looking at big six, as Vern calls it, a third of it in the Royals lineup is not playing up to expectations early, which makes you think either A, they're all going to regress and the Royals are going to be bad. And that's going to stink for everyone, but it's possible. Or these three are going to get going back to the expectation. Salvi, Vinny, and Bobby will be Salvi, Vinny, and Bobby, and we will have an offense that is not bad, and the starting pitching has looked okay. So I think if we're going to hold this team to they've struggled, let's point to the people who have struggled. It's the big three. It's Perez, Bobby, and Vinny.
Text line 913-586-7965. CDOT, you're not being fair to Hunter Renfroe. Today was against a top 10 pitcher in the league. He was hitting well before he got hurt last year. Let's give him some time. Pitchers have the advantages early on in the season. That's not where I am with Hunter Renfroe, respectively. We are in the middle of a two-year, $13 million contract. He had 229 last year. So far this season, he's hitting 143. Yeah, I'm fine with giving Hunter Renfroe time. I'm not here banging the drum to DFA Hunter Renfroe, but I mean, we are past 400 plate appearances for Hunter Renfroe. He has been a negative for you offensively since he has been here. An absolute negative for you. A team that we looked at their offense and we looked at their outfield. Hey, maybe they need to go get an outfield bat. And that was the one thing that I think people said that was missing from their offseason checklist. Jonathan India has been great. Jonathan India is hitting 320 right now. Eight hits and 25 at bats. I don't have any criticism about Jonathan India.
He's on base all the time.
Jonathan India has been exactly what you thought he was going to be. Bobby Witt Jr., you're right. Not his normal, but I'm not worried about Bobby Witt Jr. at all. Vinny hit a home run on opening day. He needs to heat things up a little bit. Salvi, your big hitters are going to hit at some point. I mean, their outfield is exactly what we thought it was going to be. I mean, right now, Hunter Renfroe is hitting 111. He has two hits this season. Excuse me. Kyle Isbell's hitting 133 this season. MJ Melendez is hitting .077 so far. Doesn't have a home run. Doesn't have an RBI this season. Your opening day outfield has three RBIs through the first six games of the season. And they're hitting a combined 120. So if you want to find out how the Royals are under 500 right now, how they just lost a series to the Milwaukee Brewers, I mean, that's how they lost a series to the Milwaukee Brewers. Offensively, you are not going to consistently win at this level if you're scoring less than three runs a game. And for the last month of games, if you go back to last season, that is exactly what has been happening with this team. Rob was just referring to Vern when he was on the show last week. I want to play that for you, talking about the Royals relying on their big six. Here's Vern.
Well, those two, those are two of the big six, the baseline guys, where it's almost cancel Christmas if Lugo, Waka, Reagans, Bobby, Salvi, or Vinny are not very close to the guy that we saw a season ago. Lugo's season was an anomaly. Fine, Waka's 2024 was his best season in 7 years. It was the best year of Cole Reagan's life. It was one of the eight best years we've ever seen out of any shortstop in baseball history, so that's a lot to ask from Bobby Witt Jr. Now, Salvi's coming up on his 35th birthday. Can he really repeat what he did at the age of 34? You know, to me, Vinny's the guy I'm the most confident in his ability to duplicate what he did in 2024.
Text line 913-586-7965. CDOT, are you including the runs for Monday? Yeah, no, that's their last 30 games, period. Like, dating back to last season, that is their last 30 games. They have scored 88 runs in those games. CDOT, I don't think that there's any reason to overly panic, but the schedule is a gauntlet the next few weeks, and we know how bad Aprils can set a tone for a season. I don't think that there's any reason to overly panic as well. I just think the Royals are, at least right now, it is early in the season, the Royals look to be the same version of what they had last season, and the strengths are going to be the strengths. Bobby Wood Jr. is one of the best players in baseball. You have one of the best young power hitters in baseball with Vinny Pasquantino. We are expecting that Salvador Perez is going to continue. Outside of that, they look like last year's team. They got really good, consistent starting pitching. They are reliant on their offense to get going at some point. I think their bullpen's fine. I don't think their bullpen has been a major issue. Their bullpen did not cost you the game today. Your bullpen didn't cost you yesterday. Your offense cost you. So I'm not saying that the sky is falling and it's reason to give up on the Royals for the entire season. I just think we have seen enough Royals baseball with this foundation of players. Because it is essentially the same offense as last year, plus Jonathan India. There's not a whole lot of changes from last year to know that offensively it is going to be a bumpy ride. They are going to have a 7 to 10 day stretch where they go 8-2 and they look amazing during that stretch. They're also going to have offensive periods like this one where they really struggle to score runs because the 5 through 9 in this lineup just isn't consistent enough. And if you don't have your big three carrying you, it looks offensively how the Royals look right now. That's how it looks. We saw this at the end of the season. Hey, if Bobby's not special and Vinny is not that, they don't have enough of an infrastructure to carry you offensively through some of those down periods. And one of those down periods is right now with the Royals. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's be joined by Kathy. She wants to talk a little Royals baseball. Hey, Kathy, how you doing this afternoon, evening? I don't even know where we at.
Kansas City.
Hey, Kathy, go ahead.
I'm just going to suggest that they try out the torpedo bats that the Yankees had last weekend, and they hit 15 home runs. So,
Kathy, you know what? That's a great idea. I appreciate you. Is there a way for us to get like a GoFundMe together that we can all come together to help get the torpedo bat? Who do you think needs the torpedo bat the most? I would say Hunter Renfroe, but he had 4 strikeouts today. That's not going to help your hand-eye coordination. You would just be missing with the torpedo bats.
I mean, MJ Melendez has 1 hit this year.
He's got 1?
He has the same amount of hits as he has number on the back of his jersey. 1.
Okay. All right. Text line 913-586-7965. Vinny is not considered a top power hitter. He hasn't played a full year in Major League Baseball. I didn't call him a top. I said he's one of the best young power hitters. He was in line to hit 25 home runs and have over 100 RBIs. My issues right now are not with Vinny. My issues right now are not with him. My issues are we knew that the outfield was a problem. Everybody that watched the Royals last year said, hey, this is the problem. You should look out for this. This is an issue. And as we are watching the first week of the season, you can't tell me they were wrong about it. You can't tell me they were wrong. All the questions that you had about the Royals outfield, that is what we have seen so far through the first week of games for the Royals. Let's go back to the phone lines. Garrett called into the show. How you doing, Garrett?
I don't know how I feel about the team. All I got to say is this. I got a question and then like a little statement here. JJ Piccolo better hopefully have somebody in AAA starting to heat up. I know that I just saw Drew Watterson for the cycle, but he's got to be a little bit more consistent. And also, he better jump the trade deadline like he did a year ago, because the Royals want to go further in the playoffs. They're going to need at least maybe 2 guys in the outfield that are power bats. You could probably survive with one, but you really should have too. And then I have a question. Which of the three has the shorter leash? Angel Serpa, MJ Melendez, or Hunter Renfro?
That's a great question. I appreciate the phone call. I think it's Hunter. I think out of those.
I don't think Zerpa's on a short leash, for the record.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I think it's coming down to those two. And can it be a tie? I mean, MJ Melendez is... I mean, we heard it preseason. They talked about how MJ was on a short leash because he has not been good. And Hunter Renfro hasn't been good either. I would say Memorial Day is kind of the date for both those guys. Maybe earlier, maybe Cinco de Mayo, just to point to a day on the calendar. It could be Day of Reckoning for those two.
Yeah, I think the big difference is, and I know we're up against it, I think the difference is this, though. MJ Melendez is 26 years old. Hunter Renfro is 33 years old. There's still some ability to salvage MJ Melendez's career. There's no question he is struggling right now at the plate. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn when saying that about MJ Melendez. Hey, man, if you're 33 years old and this is your, what, seventh team? Like, how much more time do we think Hunter Renfro has left as a Major League Baseball player? Like, tomorrow, if the Royals just DFA him and say, we are done and we are willing to eat the $5.5 million that we are paying you this season, we don't care what team you go play for. Are we sure that Hunter Renfro gets picked up? Or is he somewhere on a minor league contract and maybe he gets another chance in the league? Like, Hunter Renfro has probably less than 18 months left playing Major League Baseball. Just in theory. He's 33 years old. This is his seventh team. He's not hitting offensively. He's not a great enough defensive player that you're willing to just carry a guy that's going to hit 210 for you, that doesn't really hit for a lot of power and doesn't drive in runs. He ain't that good defensively. Are we sure that tomorrow, if the Royals gave up on Hunter Renfro, that he's instantly getting picked up? Someone would give MJ a chance if that happens. Someone would, hey, you're 26. They were doing this thing wrong. You got some skill sets. You got an athletic build. We think we can turn this thing around. I think at this point, the Royals are simply carrying Hunter Renfro. We can keep your phone calls coming up on the other side. 913-586-7965. The Royals are 2-4 on the season. They have lost both rubber games after being 1-1 in the series. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. On your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Hi, Mia here at the winnings desk of the Missouri Lottery.
We're talking about the Kansas City Royals. If you go back to last season, the Royals have scored 88 runs in their last 30 games. They have scored 2 runs in their last 20 innings. Someone texted in, CDOT, we started last year 2-4, so I am not panicking either. But with their offense, I am a little bit concerned. I don't think there's any reason to panic about the Royals. I hope you guys don't hear panic in my voice or in my tone, because I don't feel that. My only point about the Royals at this point is I haven't seen so far in the first week of the season really much growth from this Royals team. They feel like the same team they were at the end of the year, a team that struggles to score and a team that was slightly below 500 when they played anybody that wasn't the Chicago White Sox last year. Now, what does that mean for this upcoming season? It's super early. Let's give it a little bit of time. I don't think that Bobby Witt Jr., for example, is going to hit 240 this season. So I think he'll figure things out. I don't think that Salvador Perez is going to hit 208 this season. Vinny Pasquantino right now is hitting under 200. I think you are going to get more contribution from your big three than you've gotten so far. And I think at this point, it's fair to put Jonathan India in that conversation. I don't have many questions about the Royals 1-5. I don't have many questions about them. I got questions about the rest of their lineup. And how consistent can those guys be? Because what I think has happened for the Royals over the last 30 games or so is you can count on Bobby. Bobby has 3 RBIs, and you know he's going to turn things around. You can count on Vinny Pasquantino. You can count on Salvador Perez. How many other guys in this lineup do you feel like you can count on where if one or two of your big three slumps, You got a couple of guys that can round out the bottom half of your lineup that can rising tide lift all boats that can carry you in this situation. You cannot count on anyone right now in your offense to do so, or in your outfield, excuse me. You cannot count on anyone in your outfield to carry you if you are in a problem. You cannot rely on MJ Melendez offensively. You cannot rely on Hunter Renfroe offensively. You can't rely on Kyle Isbell, at least not so far at this point of the season. And I think that's their biggest problem right now.
That's fair. Maybe we're saying the same thing, or it's looking at it a little different. I'm going to hold 1-5 the standard if they need to be those guys. Jonathan India has been that guy. Bobby's been fine. I'm not going to insult Bobby. He just hadn't been, whoa, Bobby. Vinny's been just to start the season. He had a great opening day. He hit the homer. He had a great singular game. Outside of that, Vinny, now he's dealing with an injury. He hasn't been to our expectation, and neither has Salvi. So I don't disagree with you. They need more from Melendez. They need anything from Melendez, Renfroe, Isbell. They need something from that barren wasteland. But part of the Royals' plan, and maybe it's a flawed plan, is that there's those top five would be the rising tide. Right now, that tide's not rising, and it makes the other players look worse because the guys that we thought would be guys aren't holding up their end of the bargain. And I'm not trying to discount Isbell Melendez's badness offensively, but Vinny hitting sub 200, again, through six games, is almost more concerning to me because that's one of the guys that you had put in the let's make him a checkmark category, and he's iffy to start the season.
Let's head to the phone lines right now. Gene wants to talk some Royals baseball. Gene, how you doing today, my man?
Hey, good, brother. I'm not worried about the Royals, but I like this comment, bona fide scrub. I think that's Isabel, and I think that's Renfroe. They need to go. I'm surprised we even carried him over to this year. They went into so many slumps last year, and Melendez is borderline scrub because he can't figure it. I think it's all mental for him. I think he's breaking himself down inside. And I think manager Q, he needs to manage the pitching a little bit better, too. I think using so many pitchers and so many – they let guys carry it a little bit longer also. I'll listen to your comments. I appreciate you guys taking my call. Have a good one, guys.
No problem, G-Man. I appreciate it. The only thing I would say is you just mentioned the entire outfield and called them all bona fide scrubs. It was literally opening day. That was their entire starting outfield is what it was. So that's where they are. Someone on the text line, C-Dot, every team has average or below average hitters. Do you expect the Royals to be the Dodgers? No, I don't expect the Royals to be the Dodgers. I just think the Royals are, I think we know what the Royals are at this point. And until proven otherwise, the Royals are an 83 win baseball team, an 83 to 85 win baseball team. That team is going to have some flaws. They're going to get hot at some point and go on a run, and they're going to get cold at some point. So at least my biggest observation is just if you wanted to see progress from the Royals, that might be a little bit delayed at this point. And they're going to need to see progress from the back half of their lineup because that's where I think the problems currently stem from. Their rotation has been good. If you had some questions coming in about this rotation, I don't know what questions you could have after seeing them go around one time. All of them. I guess Cole Reagan's first start wasn't great, but he's been pretty good in the second one. Their rotation is as advertised. Cole Reagan's is still one of the best pitchers in baseball. Lugo was really good. Bubich was great in his first start, a guy who hasn't started for a while. And Michael Lorenzen, if you're looking at him as a potential X factor for your team, he had a pretty good first start for this team. I think their starting rotation has been exactly what we expected it to be, and they have given you a chance to win every single game. You thought that coming into the season, that the Royals are not going to be outpitched by too many teams. You're going to be able to line up wherever you are in your rotation, your 3-4-5, your 2-4, wherever you are in any three-game set, you are going to have a chance to win every single day because of their rotation. That's what we've seen so far in the first week of the season. That's what we saw for 6 months last year with the Royals rotation.
I also think, as someone who came on here and had questions on the bullpen, I think they are largely the pieces in the bullpen that you expected to be good have been good. Estevez, good. Hunter Harvey, good. Lucas Erceg, really good. Like, the guys that we are preseason saying, oof, they got three big ones, not HDH, no one's HDH, but three where you feel like, oh, you have a real good bullpen, those three have been good. Zerpa's been a little up and down. Sam Long's been a little up and down. That's the nature of bullpens. But the people that the Royals are relying on to hammer down games have been really good to start the season. The question, which it was a question we had in December, it's going to be a question we have all season, is the offense going to be enough to carry this team? I think once Bobby gets going, I think that will be the rising tide. But right now, they're 2-4 because their offense can't score enough. It's that simple. And I had a question with the bullpen. They have answered those questions.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll take a little bit of a detour. Let's talk a little bit of football. The Chiefs have asked the National Football League. The Chiefs want to play every home game on Christmas. I think the NFL has been pretty clear that Christmas is now a part of their television plan. They signed up for 2 games last year on Netflix. Those games did really well on Netflix. They have signed up for more games. I assume those games are going to be heavily rated. They also have a 3rd one because this is a Thursday, so Amazon gets their normal 1 game. At least the streaming companies, they want a game every single Christmas, and the Chiefs have asked to be a home game on every single Christmas. We'll ask you guys how you feel about this. I'll give you my reaction coming up at the top of the hour. You're listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan. Congratulations on getting through your 9-to-5. Thank you so much for listening. It is The Drive. You were listening on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. I was thinking this during the commercial break. I think what hurts the Royals, at least for the purposes of my job and for the purposes of sports talk radio, is how different the perception is for the two teams. I made the analogy when talking about football and basketball and baseball in a different context, but I can carry it over. The Chiefs are the straight-A student that aced the ACT and can go to whatever college they want to go to. The Royals are not bad anymore. I don't think they're losing 100 games. I don't think that this Royals team is going to completely lose our interest. I would say that the Royals maybe have finally gotten to the place that all of us wanted them to get through. I haven't forgotten that the expectation for the Royals used to be, hey, can you guys just get us through the offseason in the NFL? Can you guys just get us up to training camp? Hey, I want to go out to the park. I want to feel good about this team. Hey, whatever you guys do is a bonus. When the Chiefs have nothing but championship expectations, every conversation about the Chiefs is wrapped up in the context of, hey, they can win the entire thing. I don't think the Royals can win the entire thing. I think the Royals conversation is, well, you know, can they win 85 games? Can they be interesting? I think a lot of the conversation, Rob, about this is we've forgotten what it sounds like to talk about a team that doesn't really have a chance at the ultimate prize, because we spend so much time talking about a team that actually really can. It's not far-fetched to have that conversation with the Chiefs. They've played in the last 3 championship games. The Royals were under 500 last year against every team that wasn't the White Sox. Under 500. So that's where I think, at least when it comes to sports talk, I think that's what makes it sound different. The Chiefs are the PhD. They graduated from Harvard. They graduated from Yale. They're a doctor. Man, the Chiefs, you're proud that's your son. I mean, you're proud the Royals are your kid too, but I mean, they just got a regular job, you know? I mean, they pay their taxes. They're a good citizen, but, you know, like, hey, here's my son, Chad. Here's Rob. What's Rob do? You know, Rob's an accountant. He's all right. I mean, he's a good accountant, but, you know, I mean, he's all right. What about your other son? Oh, let me tell you about him. He's a heart surgeon. He's incredible. Man, hey, you want to go see what car he just got me? That's how I think the two teams are. I think the Royals are just regular. They're just fine. Just regular 9-to-5. Been married a couple of years. Got a kid. Quiet life. A nice little house. You know, it's great. Chiefs are doing amazing. And that's what I think happens whenever we talk about these two teams and what happens in sports talk. All right, Rob, let's talk a little bit about the Chiefs, and we will get back to the Royals coming up in just a bit. So, according to The Athletic, the Chiefs want to be a staple on Christmas Day, very similar to Thanksgiving, where the Lions and Cowboys play every single Thanksgiving. The Chiefs have asked the NFL, can they host a home game every single Christmas? Now, I'm a little bit torn about this, because, number one, I understand why the Chiefs would want to do this. If this is going to be a thing, which I think it is very clear that the NFL wants it to be a thing, we have now seen what the value is to a streaming company for one NFL game. They're willing to pay $30 million for the opportunity to broadcast one NFL game. You don't got to give them an entire package. You can simply break off pieces of the schedule and one by one sell games to Amazon, sell games to Netflix, sell games to Peacock. And these companies will pay a lot of money for the ability to broadcast said game. So I see why the NFL is so interested in keeping this around. We also tune into these games. It's also a game or a day in which people are off work. Like Thanksgiving, people are at home. People are together with their families. People watch television on these days. So I understand why the league wants to put games on that day. I've got this question, though, about it. How does this work? Because it works on Thursday for Thanksgiving because Thanksgiving is always the same. Sure, the date might change, but it is always the same Thursday in the same month every single year. You never have any conflicts. You have conflicts on Christmas because Christmas moves every year. What do they do when Christmas is on a Tuesday? In the collective bargaining agreement, the players cannot work on Tuesday. They are allowed days off like everybody else at their job. Your job doesn't have you work every single day. You get a weekend at some point. You get some time off. NFL players have it on Tuesday. Hey, we don't have practice. We don't have film. That's our off day. That's when we get paid every Tuesday. I'm sure Tuesday is a great day. Are they now going to ask the players to play on Tuesday too? Could we potentially be in a situation where one team quite literally could play on every single day of the week? The NFL has now shown you they're not afraid to put you on Friday. They're going to have a Friday game this year. In fact, the Chiefs could be playing in that Friday game. Remember last year was the Eagles and the Packers. This year it's going to be the Chargers. One of the teams that NBC wants is a Chiefs and Chargers game. So they could be playing on that day. We're now talking about them playing on Christmas Day, which is on a Thursday. Obviously, we'll play on Sunday and Monday and all the other days that are available. I understand why the NFL wants to do this. I get it. I understand why a team is saying, hey, I mean, if you guys are going to play on these days, they're marquee visibility days. Part of how the Cowboys became America's team is playing on every Thanksgiving. On the biggest day on the NFL schedule, at least in the regular season, the Cowboys are always on it. That's incredible for brand visibility. How does this work from a logistics standpoint when Christmas moves so much and it's also really late in the season? Christmas will one day be on a Tuesday. When do you have the team play? So they're going to play on the Sunday and then they'll play on the Tuesday. There's a lot of logistics to figure this out every single year if the NFL wants to make Christmas a staple part of the schedule the same way that it is for Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving doesn't move. And now you have adjusted the NFL schedule to accommodate every Thursday. You have not adjusted the NFL schedule to accommodate Wednesdays and Tuesdays because they don't play football games usually on Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
Me and you are 100% lockstep. When I first saw this come out, the Chiefs are trying to make themselves a fixture on Christmas. I understand why the league wants it. I understand why Clark Hunt wants it. You want to be one of the iconic brands in the NFL. You want to be on national TV as much as possible. If you lock yourself into Christmas Day, you become one of those brands. Even when the Lions stunk, we all watched the Lions one day, and the Lions had a visibility because they were playing on Thanksgiving. I get why the league, Mark Donovan, Clark Hunt, I get why all of them are signing up for this. But it feels like they're also signing up for being at a disadvantage every single season. Because even when this Christmas Day game is like this year and it's on Thursday, do you know what NFL players hate? The Thursday game. They all talk bad about it all the time.
I actually don't know if that's true. They
don't like the short week. They do not like short weeks.
I think it's actually kind of split. I actually think there's a lot of players that are just thinking, hey, we don't practice that week. Now, I'm not saying all players don't hate it. I think it's probably pretty split. I think there is a group of NFL players that think, hey, this week is easy for us. if we play on Sunday, we don't practice during the week because we play. It's just quick walkthrough. We do those things. And yeah, we go out there and we play on Thursday, and then we get Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday off for the next week. And we can rest, spend time with our family, and do all of those things. So again, I'm not saying that's every single NFL player. I'm assuming that it's pretty splitting all of those things.
But that's fair.
There certainly is a group of players that like playing on the Thursday and consider it to be an advantage on the back end, not the front end.
I think they all dislike the front end. It's probably a better way for me to say it. I don't think they like the Sunday to Thursday turnaround. And that's something we already have on the schedule. There are going to be some years where it's the hinky Saturday to Wednesday you got last year. How does a Tuesday? Like, there are, you know, now let's say the Chiefs play on Monday Night Football on Christmas Day. Now it's a short week going into the final week of the season, which could be... I think from a branding perspective, this makes sense. From a competitive on the field prospect, if I'm Clark Hunt, I'm not volunteering my team for this for in perpetuity. If I get it, I get it. But I'm not signing up forever for this, because I think there is a potential competitive disadvantage that is just, to me, as important as the branding and imaging of the team.
Text line 913-586-7965. CDOT, the NBA has already figured Christmas games off with days off. That's not that hard. I don't think it's fair to compare it to the NBA. Number one, we're not even halfway through the season when they do this in the NBA, and the NBA is already used to playing on every single day of the week anyways. It's very, very different. So, yeah, you just don't play on Monday and Tuesday. You'll play on the Wednesday. You'll get some days off on the back end, and we can figure out the schedule. Yeah, I mean, that's not that hard to figure out if you're baseball or basketball and you already build your schedule this way. It's not really how NFL schedules work. I mean, there's some teams that they play on 3 days a week. They play on Thursday. They play one Thursday game. They play a majority of their games on Sunday. Maybe they get a Monday game. It is just now a new thing that we are opening up the schedule where you play every single day. They also have it in the NBA where teams play on back-to-back days. That's part of the problem with NBA players. They don't want to play on back-to-back days. We don't want to have to play on Tuesday, then we have to fly somewhere and then turn around and play on Wednesday. That is a problem that you don't have in the NFL. So I don't know if it's fair to compare the way the NBA schedules these things versus how the NFL can potentially schedule Christmas and how things could potentially work. It is obvious that when money is involved, and we are talking about a whole lot of money, that they will figure this thing out, and the players will complain about it, but their paychecks will go up, and usually that calms a lot of it. I do think it's pretty interesting, and I would say this is something that the Chiefs will probably get. If the Chiefs are volunteering to do this, and at least in the short term, now it's not going to be this in perpetuity, but if you were telling me that, hey, we have this Christmas Day schedule, one team has stepped up and said we want to play on these days, and they got Patrick Mahomes on their team, and we also think in the short term they could potentially have a new stadium that we would want to highlight, whether that stadium's on the Missouri side or the Kansas side, I see why the NFL would just tell the Chiefs, okay, all right, you got Patrick Mahomes, you're a marquee brand, you're one of our most popular teams right now. Sure, maybe this will be an issue in 2037 when the Chiefs could be just a 7-9 football team. Sure, that's a possibility that we could get there. But at least for a very short period of time, this is one of the best deals that the NFL can have. They usually got to force teams to do stuff. We got to force you to want to do Hard Knocks. We got to force you to want to sign up to go overseas and international. We got a team that's willing to move to accommodate our television schedule, and it's one of the more popular teams on television. Great. Do it.
I agree with you. It probably won't be in perpetuity, but I'm betting, and me and Clark Hunt aren't bros, so I've never talked to Clark Hunt about this, but I'm betting if you asked him, like if you got him away from microphone, he would tell you he probably wants it in perpetuity. Like, the Lions had a lot of lean years on Thanksgiving. The Cowboys are currently giving us a lot of lean years on Thanksgiving. You know what they are every year? On Thanksgiving. You and I know it right now. The schedule hasn't even come out yet. I know in the 2026 season, guess what? The Lions are going to be on Thanksgiving Day.
I'm also guessing they're probably going to play the Bears.
I mean,
you know, either the Bears or the Vikings.
Yeah,
one of those two teams.
Or remember when they were bad, they'd always play like Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning gets to go drub the Lions.
Yeah.
But you know what? If I'm Clark Hunt and I do it for the next 10 years, I bet then he turns on the league and says, hold on, I've been doing this for 10 years. This is my day, the way the Lions have Thanksgiving, the way the Cowboys have Thanksgiving. So you're right. In the short term, I get why the Chiefs are doing it. But I'm betting the Chiefs have have plans of doing this in perpetuity if they're volunteering it for. I don't think the Chiefs are volunteering for this to one day fall out of favor on Christmas Day. I think they have forever plans.
Text line 913-586-7965. CDOT, Patrick Mahomes has three young kids. Do you think he wants to go to work every year on Christmas Day? I really dislike this idea. I would like to point out that LeBron James has worked on Christmas Day now for 22 consecutive years. And I would say that you're right. I don't think that Patrick Mahomes wants to work every day on Christmas. He also was a billionaire. All of us kind of got something at our job that we're not too excited about, but our job tells us, hey, you got to go do it. And he gets paid very, very handsomely for it. So, yes, it stinks that Patrick, at least for the next 15 years or so, will not be able to wake up with his kids and have all of those things. Your dad's also Patrick Mahomes. You know, it comes with its own positives and negatives. So I certainly understand the sentiment, but I don't think the NFL cares about that. I don't think they care about our family or their families. I think they care about you watching it on television. And last year, we knew what it was. It was a case study. It was a case study. They put two, I mean, they weren't good games, but they put four marquee teams. They put it on a streaming service, and we watched in incredible numbers. And if you're seeing that, and we imagine that the numbers, I mean, Netflix only signed up to do this for 2 years. It was a two-year experiment.
I'm betting it gets extended. I can't confirm that.
It's 1,000% being do they
meet?
Extended.
When do they meet? They meet in May again. The owners reconvene in May.
And
oh, yeah, that's coming.
It was a two-year case study. They are halfway through the case study. Year one was phenomenal. They got Beyonce to do a concert. Mariah Carey sang. It was a case study. It went well. It sounds to me they're putting the Chiefs back on there again, so you guys should be excited about, hey, now the Chiefs want to be the home team. So get excited about Steelers and Chiefs on Christmas Day and go out there on Thursday, spend time with your family, wear your Santa costumes, and you're right. I think that Netflix is then going to sign up for 5 to 10 years, and this is going to be a thing, and they'll work with the players to figure out how we are going to make this thing work from a scheduling standpoint. I also think them playing in Brazil is pretty interesting. For the first game of the season. It sounds like that's what they're going to do.
I don't like that one as much. I don't like that. You know what? I mean, I know that.
I actually don't mind it.
That game's going to be exclusively on Peacock, so I'm looking forward to this hypocrisy over there.
No, that part I'm not excited about. But you know me. As long as the Chiefs stay away from noon on Sunday, hey, I don't care what other time that they play. I'm perfectly fine with every time they play. You're telling me we'll get Thursday night football, which will include the Eagles. The Chiefs then play on Friday. Sunday we get a full slate. I'm cool with it. I don't have much of an issue with them playing on Friday. I'm fine with it.
Here's my reason why I'm not fine with it. Do you know what the biggest talking point out of Eagles and Packers from Brazil was last year?
The field was terrible.
The field was terrible.
I mean, they also don't. I mean, hold on. To be fair. We've seen the field be bad in the Super Bowl.
That's true.
Don't care about those playing conditions. They got those players playing on. They don't care about that. You better go get my money. How many times does the NFL have to tell us this before we figure out they don't care about player safety? They don't care about you buying tickets. They don't care about any of those things. Are you watching the games on television? That's their number one priority. It is not player safety. It is not families. It is not health. It is none of those. Go get my money. Go get my money. The moment you show up for training camp, everything about it is you work for the man. So, no, you think they care about the field conditions? They don't care. Rob, they went to a place that they told the players, don't go outside. Last year. I'm not joking.
And they're going back.
I'm not joking.
They're making a return trip.
I'm serious.
They said, don't go outside. Don't wear green. Be careful if you turn the corner. We're going back.
I'm serious.
Party abroad.
They literally went to a place last year where they told the players, hey, you can't be a regular tourist. Don't walk around. Don't have fun. Don't enjoy the city. You need to stay in your hotel, play in the game on the field that's not in great conditions, and go immediately back home. And you're right. They're sending the players back to that same place. So, no, they do not care about any of those things that you are talking about. All right, Rob, hit the button, man.
Your workday is over.
Oh, yeah.
You're headed home, and now you're stuck in traffic. Time to get caught up on the biggest stories in Kansas City and around the country with CDOT and Rob. It's time for the hits. Number one.
Hold on, can I read this? See, well, they do make millions of dollars, so it's a bit of give and take. Hey, if the take is you can't leave your hotel because we don't believe it's safe, maybe you shouldn't be there. I don't think that that's asking a whole lot. When they tell you that you can't walk around, you can't go like your family can't, hey, we're in this new country, we've never been here before, I want to go outside, see the locals. No, please do not do that. It's not safe for you to do that. Maybe we should just play games here.
I'd also say it's not just Clark Hunt and Dean Spanos making money from the Chargers and Chiefs game. You know who's not going? Jerry Jones. You know who's going to make a lot of money from the Brazil game? Jerry Jones, because it's going to be on television and a streaming service and all the things that line the pockets of the owners. Yeah, the millionaires get a tough deal. The billionaires get a real good deal. By the way, the hits are brought to you by Baker University, where graduates earn higher salaries and land Shout jobs faster Baker. Than any other university in Kansas. Apply today at bakeru.edu.
You want to talk about the Royals?
We can talk about the Royals.
Let's talk about the Royals. Somebody said the NFL told them not to wear green, but both teams' primary colors were green. Yeah, I'm telling you, it was wild what happened last year. We don't talk about that nearly enough.
But it's good. I will say, it doesn't appear the Chiefs are going to lose a home game, so that's...
No, yeah, you'll always take that.
That's at least a win.
Yeah, no, you always take that.
I mean, they've lost home games in the past. Like, we never got to see Tyreek Hill. We eventually got it, but Tyreek Hill didn't come back to Arrowhead because we had to play in Frankfurt.
Oh, yeah, they did play that game in Frankfurt. I forgot about that game. I forgot about that. All right, let's talk about the Royals. I'm not panicked about the Royals. I'm not worried about the Royals. I'm not worried. I just think the Royals are the same. I do. I believe the Royals are the same as they were last year, which can be a good thing or a bad thing. Last year's team made the postseason. They won 86 games. They made the postseason. It was great. Have you, I imagine that a lot of you parents have been in this situation before. I won't even make a relationship analogy. I'll make a parenting analogy. Your kid messes up and your kid tells you, man, you know what? I'm going to work harder. It's going to be different. You're like, I don't know about that, son. No, no, I promise you. It's going to be different. I'm going to keep my room clean. All right, cool. All right, yeah. Your kid does this for like 7 to 10 days. You can see he's really doing his best. You can tell he's really doing his best. Then a month later, you're kind of like, I don't know, man. You resorted back to what you usually do. This is how people do New Year's resolutions. You're really excited about it in the very beginning. In January, oh my goodness, you went to Dick's Sporting Goods. You got all the new equipment. You're serious about this. I don't know, man, about February, you know what? You're not as serious about this. Everybody's New Year's resolution is to read more books. You read one book last year, and then you went back to not reading anymore. That's kind of what I think the Royals are. I think the Royals are the same as last year. I think they're the same. I think all of the strengths the Royals had last year, I think are still strengths today. I think all of the weaknesses that they had last year, they are the same weaknesses that they have this year. I think the Royals are the same kind of team. Now, will you get the same results? Let's see. Their division is different this year than it was last year. You're not going to have the same team to beat up on in the White Sox that you had last year. Maybe... The Twins are worse this year than they were last year. We'll see about the Tigers or the Guardians. Or the other things around you could be different for better or worse. But I think the Chiefs, or excuse me, the Royals, I think they're the same. I think they're the same. I wouldn't be too worried about some of the players in their offense and their ability to turn things around. I'm not going to spend any amount of time worried about Bobby Witt Jr., who's hitting 240 right now, who doesn't have a home run. I'm not worried about Bobby Witt Jr. He's going to hit 35 home runs this season and have 107 RBIs. I'm not worried about him. I'm not worried about Salvador Perez. I'm not worried about Vinny Pasquantino. I'm not worried about their core. I'm not worried about their 2, 3, or 4. I'm also really encouraged by what I've seen with Jonathan India. We were told that Jonathan India was going to bring a certain thing to the team. I think he has brought that thing to the team. I think he has been very, very good. I don't care what happened on opening day. He has 8 hits and 25 ABs. He's getting on base. He's hitting for average. He's stealing bases. I like Jonathan India. I'm a big fan. Everything else about their team seems exactly identical to what they had last season. All the hitters you had questions about, they have the exact same questions this year. Their rotation, very strong last year. They maybe had one of the top three rotations in the American League. We've seen one time around, it kind of looked the same as last year. Their bullpen seems good. Doesn't seem dominant. Doesn't seem like it's their strongest, but I don't have many issues, many complaints about the bullpen. The Royals just seem as advertised. They seem like the same team as last year. They seem like a team that's going to hover around 500 for most of the season and have a chance to win somewhere between 83 and 85 games. And we'll find out, like last year, if that's enough for you to be able to win the division or so. So I'm not panicked in any way about the Royals. I just think we've seen enough Royals baseball over the last 18 months against teams that are not the Chicago White Sox to kind of give you an idea of what the Royals are. And I think that's who they are.
I also think they're the same, but I don't think we've gotten the same out of the big three. Salvador Perez isn't the same right now. Now, maybe that's regression because he's a year older. I don't know. It's six games, so I'm willing to say it's just a slow start. We'll see. I would say Vinny Pasquantino, when healthy, has not been the same. He was a 25 and 100 RBI guy last year before he got hurt. He is not right now a 25 home run, 100 RBI guy. Again, six games, but I don't think he's at the same level. Bobby was arguably the best hitter in baseball last year this side of Aaron Judge. He is not the best hitter in baseball this side of Aaron Judge right now. So I think they're the same, but the guys that we thought, oh, if we get the same output, watch out, are failing to hit that same marker. And guys that we thought, can they take a step forward, haven't. And those two things, when they hit at the same time, little spurts like 2-4 happen. But I'll tell you this, I'm not going to overreact, because if the Royals went 2-4 over a six-game stretch on May 17th through 23rd, it would not be the sky is falling. So I'm not going to treat the first six games like the sky is falling, because 2-4 over a six-game stretch in baseball is kind of just baseball's happening.
No, and that, I think that is very, very fair. Certainly no question about it when it comes to the Royals. They are 2-4. They haven't played a week of games left. That's fair. But I think it is important to note, because a lot of people keep bringing that up, that they were 2-4. Do you want to know who their next four games were against after they started 2-4?
Chicago White Sox.
And they swept that series. And they swept them.
The Orioles are a different ballgame.
And they swept them. So all I'm saying is, last year, anytime the Royals really got into trouble, the White Sox were usually there to cushion any fall. They got off to a slow start last year. They were 2-4. I mean, almost identical of what happened in the first. I mean, just the games they won, lost. It was almost the exact same start. They then had the White Sox at home and pounded the White Sox for four straight games. I don't know if that schedule exists. I don't know if that cushion exists right now on the schedule. The truth of the matter is about the Royals, and I don't think this is being negative about the Royals. The Royals have to prove to us that they can be consistently good against teams that are not the White Sox. They have not proven that in the last 2 years. They were under 500 last year in games that were not against the Chicago White Sox. They don't look to be any different than that this year. So if we're looking solely at the numbers, they got to prove to me that they're an over 500 club against teams that are not the worst team in Major League Baseball. And so far through the first two series of the season, they look to have a lot of the same problems that they had last year against teams that were not the Chicago White Sox. We'll keep this conversation going. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Hey, it's Lucas Ersig from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with CDOT on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Welcome back into the show. CDOT. The Royals won the season series last year against the Tigers and the Cleveland, and I believe they made the postseason. But yes, the Royals' overall record against 500 teams was a losing record. Maybe I'm not being clear. Last year, the Royals, they won 86 games. They won 86 and 76. They went 12-1 against the White Sox. If you remove those games, they went 74-75 against every other team in baseball last season. Every other team. Now, the games against the White Sox happened. No, there's no question about it. But it is impossible to deny a big reason of why the Royals made the postseason last year was because they dominated the Chicago White Sox. Just based on the math, they beat the White Sox more than any other team in baseball last year. So I'm not saying they can't make it this year. Of course they can. They absolutely can make the postseason this year. They're going to have to be better than 74 and 75 against the rest of baseball. And part of that is when you split the first two games against the Guardians in the opening series, you got to figure out a way to win that Sunday game. Part of it is in this series against a team that had been dominated in their first four games of the season, a team that you beat 11-1 on the first game of the series. You got to figure out a way to win one of the next 2 days. The Royals scored two runs the next 3 days, or 2 days. They scored 20 runs in their final 20 innings of this series against the Milwaukee Brewers. In the last 30 games that the Royals have played, dating back to last season, their last 30 games, they've scored 88 runs in those games. You're not going to be a consistent winning product if you're averaging less than three runs a game. So a lot of the Royals' problems can solve themselves if the bats simply wake up. Their pitching was good enough today to win. Offense wasn't good enough to win today. It's that simple. Their pitching was good enough. I'm not here to argue about Sam Long or Angel Zerp or any of those individuals. I mean, the last 2 days, they've scored two runs. So, yeah, yesterday you lost 5-0. Don't really want to lose, give up five runs, but yeah. Today you gave up three runs to a team that has really struggled to score this year. The Brewers are not that much better than the Royals offensively. You lost 3-2. You lost 3-2 in that. So, I mean, it's kind of simple. Score runs, win games. So that's where I am with the Royals, Rob. Are you on the same place as me, at least when it comes to the offense?
Yes. I mean,
at some point, I'm sure we will have a conversation about the bullpen. At some point, we'll have a conversation about these other things. I mean, the last 2 days, if you score two runs over a 20-inning stretch, I don't – there really isn't much other conversation. You weren't – well. You didn't hit well enough to win either of those two games. You lost both of them.
I agree with the offense part. I will say this about the White Sox part. You're right. The math says they throttled the White Sox, and that was a key to their success in 2024. But I actually agree with the texter here. They were a winning baseball team against Cleveland and Detroit. If you're a winning baseball team against Cleveland, Detroit, this year Minnesota might be the dregs of the lead. They look real bad early. If you're a winning team against three quarters of your division, you don't need to go 12-1 or whatever against the White Sox. But if you're a winning team four division teams, you might still be the same. You might still be the same 86-win team. You got to the same destination, you took a different path. But if you have a winning series record against Cleveland, Minnesota, Chicago, and Detroit, which they did three quarters of that last year, you're probably back in the playoffs because you would have either won your division or you'd be right there. So you're right. The math says they got a lot of wins against the White Sox, but maybe the Twins are a team you can feast on some wins. There could be teams on the schedule right now that wins could be had we didn't anticipate wins having. Like that, there's a way to still get to 86, just have the math work differently.
I 100% agree. But I remember you and I were having this, I guess, debate. It wasn't a debate. I was making the analogy when we were using the Electoral College. I think it is safe to say that you're not going to get 12 votes against the White Sox anymore. You're not going 12-1 against that team this upcoming season. Now, you might go 9-3 against that team, but you're going to have to then pick up those wins from somewhere else in baseball. And a lot of those wins are going to be the Royals. They were not good in situations like today. You won the first game of the series. You lost the second game of the series. Now it's getaway day. You got to figure out a way to win. That was the Royals' Achilles heel last season against everybody that wasn't the White Sox. So far this season, it's been the exact same problem. You got to figure out a way to, you can't lose both. You can't lose the Guardians game three and this Brewers game three. You got to find a way to win one of those two games. You find a way to win one of those two games. We're sitting here at 500. Hey, you won a series, you lost another series, you're treading water. Hey, let's just move on to the next city.
I will say this. This is us probably saying the exact same thing, just different. What's the old adage in baseball? You're going to lose 50, you're going to win 50, and you know it's whatever happens when they're 62. They're 0-2 in that 62 window. You could argue opening day should have been a win. They were up 3-0. They then had a chance to win it in the 8th. They then had a chance to win it in the 9th. They then lost that game in the 10th inning. They probably should have won the day. They had a chance to take the lead in the 9th. They had a chance to extend the lead in the 10th. They had a chance to take a lead in the 11th. They didn't cash those tickets. They lose today. So a team like the Royals, who's going to have to win on the margins, they're not going to just thump you the way the Yankees thump you or the Dodgers are just running through baseball. You got to, we have our 50 wins, we have our 50 losses. What do we do with this middle ground? You could argue in the middle ground right now, they are 0-2, and you cannot be a losing baseball team in that middle window if you're going to go back to the playoffs this season.
Text line 913-586-7965. CDOT, the point is that it's way too early to make any of these assumptions. It's only been a week of baseball. Everyone's living and breathing in the exact moment when it's been 7 out of 162. Let's let it breathe first. I don't disagree with you. Not here burying the Royals, but, I mean, I saw Hunter Renfro all last season. Does he look different to you? Because the same Hunter Renfro that played for the 2024 Royals is the same one that looks like he's playing for the 2025 Royals. MJ Melendez, we heard all offseason about how his swing was different. Because we're going to get a new and improved MJ Melendez. It looked like he got the same problems as last year. Kyle Isbell. The Royals just don't look different to me. And you're right, maybe it's early. Maybe we're premature. We're not. Hey, all of those points I think are very fair about this team. I haven't really seen much evidence yet that the problems that the Royals had last year, that they are now part of the solutions for this upcoming year. It has just been a continuation of what got them eliminated from the postseason. This is what got them eliminated from the postseason. The last month of the season, they could not score against anybody. They could not score. What lost them the series against the Brewers? Their offense continues to struggle. I guess that's my at least larger point when talking about the Royals in the first week or so of the season. Let's take a little bit of a break here. Coming up on the other side, let's talk a little bit of NFL draft. I want to give you guys a bit of draft every day before we actually get there. We got, what, 22 days before round one of the NFL draft. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Welcome back into The Drive on 96.5 The Fan. All right, let me play this audio for you guys. This is from Adam Schefter. This audio comes courtesy of his podcast. I feel pretty confident in who the number one overall pick is going to be. I think it's going to be Cam Ward out of the University of Miami. Well, we don't know who the number two overall pick is going to be. We don't know who the number three overall pick is going to be. Adam Schefter tries to provide some clarity to these questions.
And it certainly feels like the Cleveland Browns are inclined to look elsewhere aside from quarterback. And it's starting to feel like the New York Giants at number three are starting to look elsewhere other than quarterback. So if the Browns don't take Shedeur Sanders at two, and if the Giants don't take Shedeur Sanders at three, and that is the feel that I'm getting recently, where is Shedeur Sanders going?
I believe that the Browns are going to take Abdul Carter with the number two overall pick. It just makes a lot of sense to me. The NFL is about being elite at something, and I don't think drafting Shedeur is the pathway to being elite at quarterback. So where else can we potentially be elite? Pass rush. I think that Myles Garrett is the best pass rusher in the National Football League. If we pair him with another very talented young pass rusher, we can maybe have the best pass rush in the league. I think the Browns have a pretty good, capable defense. All right, so we got a good defense. Now, you know what I would do if I'm the Browns? I'm calling Atlanta back. Hey, you guys got a backup quarterback that you guys don't think's going to start this season. How much? What do you guys want? That's what I'd be doing if I'm the Browns, and I'm trying to find a pathway towards taking a big step forward and making the postseason. But I don't think the Browns are using the number two overall pick on Shedeur Sanders. I don't think this is a smokescreen. I think they're not taking him. I wouldn't take Shedeur with the number two overall pick, and I think he could be a good prospect. If I'm going to take you that high, you got to have an elite something. You got to have elite size, speed, arm strength. You got to have an elite something. I don't think that's what Shedeur has. I think Shadur can be a good quarterback in the right system. What's the ceiling for Shadur as an NFL player? Like, when you saw him play at Colorado, who does he look like to you in the league? Who can he be? Doesn't have a big arm, isn't elusive, isn't a scrambler in that sense. I think he can be a good quarterback in the right system. I think he can be Sam Darnold from last year. Very accurate, not super athletic, not super mobile, but right team, right system, right offensive mind. You got a capable quarterback. Are you willing to bet the number two overall pick on that? I wouldn't be. I think the Giants are taking Travis Hunter. I'm kind of coming around on that side. Now, maybe they go offensive line, but I'm looking at Travis Hunter there. If you're the Giants, makes a lot of sense to me why you would go get Travis Hunter. Bonafide star, can play both ways. Dable's got some visions of how to use him in the offense. They figure it out on defense. Could maybe argue he's the best player in this draft class. Certainly the most unique prospect in this draft class. I think Shadur's sitting for a while. I think he'll go in the first round, but I think we are trying to force a square peg into a round hole and argue that he is going to be a top five pick in this year's draft class when I don't think he's going to be that. I think he's going to be somebody that goes in the late teens, early 20s. I think the value's too strong to let him fall out of the first round, and some team's going to take him. This is what I would do. If I'm Cleveland, I'm taking Abdul Carter with the number two overall pick. And if you're not confident that you can get Kirk Cousins, I'm trading up in the, I'm using my 33rd overall pick. We got a high second round pick, and I'm wheeling and dealing and finessing to a team to see if we can move back into the first round. We get that pick. We get our pass rusher. We get our quarterback for the future. We can sit back and let him develop for a little bit and go from there. But I'm not forcing it where I'm making Shadur Sanders the number two or number three overall pick in the draft. And if he doesn't get selected very high, there just aren't a lot of teams once you get outside of three that desperately need a quarterback that I think are taking him. The Jets, for example, that pick in the top 10. The Jets are not drafting a quarterback this year. There's a lot of those teams that I think this year they're going to go elsewhere, and I think Shadur is going to fall a little bit.
I don't think you're wrong about Shadur's talent. But Carrington, there's not a lot of premium players in this draft at premium positions. Abdul Carter, Cam Ward are two guys that are great at important positions. Travis Hunter is the most unique player we've maybe ever seen in the draft. If you want to tell me he's an elite corner or an elite receiver, cool. I think the guy from Michigan, Graham, the defensive tackle, I think he's an elite player. But defensive tackle is not one of those type of positions. So I think when you start looking around the draft, there's not an elite tackle. There's not a ton of elite wide receivers, at least top five type of guys. There's two elite type corners, he and Will Johnson. Like, I think Shadur is going to get overdrafted. That's a product of the draft being kind of soft at the top, which will probably create unfair expectations for Shadur. In a regular year, I agree with you. But this draft class is not wow worthy.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that just stems from we don't see that quarterback there, and you're right. Like, I would say two of the five most important positions on the field, it's just not that strong at. But I think this draft has some really good wide receivers. I think this draft has some really good running backs. So if you're looking for one of those two positions, go draft one of those two. So I think this draft is different, but I do agree with you. Some of those foundational meat and potato positions are just not available in this year's NFL draft. All right, we'll have a full show tomorrow. We'll catch you guys then. Take care of yourself. It's a drive.